This is Jeff.
This is Brandon.
We're the Film Blurs. This episode is brought to you by
Puma presents the new AC Milan third kit for the 2021-22 season. The bold new progressive jersey takes traditional design and rewrites the rules to push the boundaries and defy convention. The new AC Milan third kit creates a fearless new expression of the club's identity and challenges tradition by reimagining conventional football kits in a brand new approach that merges football and streetwear culture. Puma, we are forever faster. Puma.com.
Get your films on with the Blurs.
Once an idea has taken hold of the brain, it's almost impossible to eradicate.
Unpacking movies has never been more spot on, woke, fire, and just plain lit.
They are lit all the time.
So if you're unsure whether or not to plop down some cash for a film, check out the Blurs.
When a man with a .45 meets a man with a rifle, the man with a pistol is a dead man.
Brando's got what plants crave.
It's got electrolytes.
You really only need to hang, mean bastard. But mean bastards, you need to hang.
Don't say you weren't warned. Ridiculous. Here's Brandon and Jeff.
All right, lights, camera, and action. I'm Jeff Stewart.
I'm Brandon Norwood, the protagonist.
And we are the Film Blurs. You are in for a treat. This is a very, very special episode devoted to the ASC nominated cinematographers for 2021.
The American Society of Cinematographers.
I know we talk about the nuts and bolts of film a lot, but this is going to be concentrating exclusively on the cinematography.
And we'll still talk about the movies themselves, but just not as heavily as we would normally. Real quick though,
shout out to New Pod City
and Frank, and shout out to the ASC for everything they've done. Also, follow us at Film Blurds on Instagram and follow our Twitter page at Blurds The.
If you want to follow us individually, you can follow me on Instagram at MindfireXL, and you can follow Brandon at
Bwood0824 on Instagram and at BJNTweets on Twitter.
And so now that we got the house cleaning out of the way, let's get into it.
Let's start with Mank. Mank was lensed and photographed by Eric Messerschmidt. It's emulating Citizen Kane. It's in black and white. It was shot digitally. I think it probably would have worked a little better if it was actually shot on film.
Right, yes. I really appreciated how true to like 1940s composition, lighting, just blocking this movie was.
Yeah.
I mean, it felt like a throwback. You know, a lot of these movies now try to emulate what it looked like. It, like movies that took place in the 80s, they put a film grain on it and that's it. They don't look at how movies in the 80s were shot, what the film language was back then.
Right.
You know, and I think Mank really, really kind of honed in on that.
The one thing I appreciate about Mank is that it used modern technology to emulate the 1930s and 40s. You know what I mean? Like right. Fincher, that's what Fincher does best, is push modern technology. So he'll heighten buildings digitally and you can't tell, or he'll add little things in to spread out the frame. And don't get me wrong, there's people, like the way this is blocked, like I can only imagine as a DP how he had to shoot this, because there's a lot of people moving in and out of the frame, because a lot of this takes place on movie sets or in a bedroom where people are taking care of Herman Mankiewicz and they're moving in and out of the room. I can only imagine how it was for the DP to block this and for the focus puller where to open the lens and when to close it.
Right, because like, all right, so I've seen whole entire YouTube breakdowns on how Fincher actually edits. It's a combination of After Effects, sort of like taking two different takes and kind of merging them together and stuff like that. So like, he is one of the most deliberate filmmakers out there.
Yeah, yeah.
If you look at the filmography for Eric, he hasn't really done anything of this caliber.
Which is impressive that this is his first film that he's DP'd.
Right. He's come out, like, he's done TV. He's been doing TV for years, but like, you know, Fincher, you know, he must have seen something in him. But that's like Trial by Fire, though, dude.
You know what? But you look at the shows he's done, and those shows are meticulous, like Mindhunter, Legion, Fargo. Those are meticulous. Like, every detail in those shows
Raised by Wolves, too.
See, yeah, and that's Ridley Scott. So, like, yeah. People working on those shows, Noah Hawley's meticulous. Fincher, obviously meticulous. He thinks everything in the frame, like, he would come in and say, hey, why are these coasters on the table? Right, you know what right. I mean? Like, he puts a thought into everything. He worked with Fincher on Mindhunter, so I get it. He wants to keep the same team.
Yeah, he did, like, what is it, IMDb? I think he did 8 episodes. He did, like, all of season 2 of Mindhunter.
Okay, so, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I really have nothing negative to say about how this was shot. I would like to talk to him and see what is it like to work with Fincher.
Yo, I read on the trivia for IMDb that he made Gary Oldman, who plays Herman Mankiewicz, right. The main character, made him do 90 takes of one scene, and he flipped out where Gary Oldman's just like, David, we've done this scene 90 fucking times. I'm not doing it for a 91st time. And he comes over to him very calmly and says, but Gary, we haven't done the 91st take.
Like, can you really complain about him being a certain way when you get the result?
People ask him, like, why do you do so many takes? He's like, well, because once you do so many takes, eventually you wear the actors down and you start getting honest.
Like, I'm a, like, 3 takes and I'm done.
I'm the same way like Nolan. I do 2 or 3 takes and I move on. Unless I'm not happy, then I do like 4 or 5, but I've never done more than 6 takes.
Right.
Well, let's move on to the trial of the Chicago 7, photographed by Faden Papamichael, directed by Aaron Sorkin, his second film.
I think every Aaron Sorkin film from now on should just be called Speech, the movie. Speech, the sequel, Speech 2, Speech Harder.
Remember when we talked about the Oscars and how I said the Oscar producer said the fact that we nominated the Trial of the Chicago 7 for Best Picture proves we shouldn't be doing the Oscars this year, because he called it a glorified Sundance movie.
I don't even think it was a glorified Sundance movie, man. You described it best. It seemed like TV.
Yeah, the whole thing was a TV. It was, no offense to Faden. Faden has done a lot of stuff where I've seen it in Locke, but that's not, I feel like it's not on him. That's on Sorkin. Like,
that's on Sorkin not having, he's coming from TV. So he's making the jump from TV.
It's like Joss Whedon, where it's just overlit and right. Looks ugly.
TV over the last couple of years is trying to learn
from film.
From film.
How to look.
But film can't learn how to do
storytelling
that TV does. It's one of those things where you got to stay in your own lane, you know, like, or you have to learn to drive in that other lane.
Yeah, man, because you know what? There's a lot of TV shows now that look
like better than cinema.
Yeah, and by what we mean by TV, we're talking about like everything up until the early 2000s, like everything before the early 2000s was just overlit. It had a look that was just ugly.
It's like a shot, reverse shot,
yeah,
you know, master,
yeah,
and close-ups, you yeah know, like it's
there's no risk taken because they had to shoot it quickly on much lower budget. And that's the thing also, is like now they're giving TV shows massive budgets right. As big as movies. So
yeah, but I'm looking at like his work, and he shot Ford versus Ferrari.
That movie is beautiful.
It was a little too digital for me
at parts.
But like, I fucking loved that movie.
Yeah.
But that's again.
It's the director.
It's the director, you know.
Yeah. James Mangold's movies always look good.
Right. When we were talking about the whole entire collaboration between the DP and the director, I don't think there was a collaboration as much on this film.
You think this is Faden just doing just...
No, I think this is just like Aaron Sorkin just kind of be like, all right, just make my lines look pretty. You know, like make my speeches.
I could say
make my speeches pop.
The only redeeming thing about this movie was the performances. Otherwise, like, I wasn't engaged.
I mean, I did enjoy that, I guess you would call it a tracking shot, when they're first in the courtroom and you're jumping from conversation to conversation.
Oh, okay. Right.
You know, mm-hmm. Like that was inventive. Like I said, this is competently shot, but like there's no pizzazz in it. And then, like, I guess there shouldn't be pizzazz.
But I mean, Fences is all about the dialogue, and even Fences is shot nicely. And Denzel, he's the director on that movie. Aaron Sorkin is just not a good director, just because like he can write, but he doesn't have the vision.
But I like Molly's Game though.
I like the script. I don't necessarily like the whole movie. Like, I feel like had that been anybody else directed that.
Yeah,
I mean, there's a reason why The Social Network is what it is.
Because it's Fincher.
Yeah,
you know,
doing Aaron Sorkin.
Right.
He needs a good director to handle his work. He's a writer, not a director.
Right. I mean, so like I was unoffended by this.
Yeah.
In a year where we have Judas and the Black Messiah.
Yes. Where they're doing next level shit for a biopic with right. their lighting.
If Judas and the Black Messiah hadn't come out this year, I wouldn't have been as harsh on this.
Well, this also feels dated, man, because this is the type of movie that would have won Best Picture in like the 90s and the early 2000s.
Yeah. Like I said, it's competently shot. I mean, I don't want to sound like a dick, but like compared to the other shooters.
Yeah. That are on
this list.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like it should be on this list.
And you can't, you know? I feel like, I don't know why this was on here, but, and that's no offense to Faden because he's a good DP. Like we've seen other stuff he's done.
Right. And I've, like I said, he did Ford versus Ferrari, which I absolutely fucking loved. Now, he did Nebraska.
Yeah, man.
Yeah. I'm looking at his
has hitters.
Right. He's got some, he did 310 to Yuma.
See what I mean?
Yeah. So like
this falls at the feet of
the director
of Sorkin. Nomadland. We've talked about this movie before. Yeah. It's Chloe Zhao. James Joshua Richards is the DP.
For a movie that felt more like a documentary, I love the way that this was shot.
Oh, yeah. You could tell a lot of it was natural light.
Right. It was like a lot of it was natural light. And I don't know if it was just me, but I loved how it went from these wide, super wide angles of like the landscape to like these smash close-ups.
Claustrophobic in the van.
Right.
Her like, taking a shit in the van.
Right. Like it was kind of like disconcerting, but also, I don't know, like it made me feel more connected to the character.
Right.
Because it's like this, all right, this is wide open vista and then like smash cut to a close-up of her like driving in the car.
People have been calling Nomadland poverty porn, and I don't think it's poverty porn. This is a story about resilience. You know what I mean?
I mean, I get the poverty porn aspect of it. She has the option to like settle down.
But we're not to spoil it, but you find out the reason why at the very end,
right?
Why she's living the way she's living. And when you find out that reason, you're like, yeah, okay.
For a very simple movie, it's a very complex premise.
Yeah.
And like a podcast where I say fuck and shit every other sentence, I don't think I have the vocabulary or the knowledge to dissect the problems that are
being brought, that are being brought up here,
right?
Yeah. Other than the American government just fails everybody every day,
right? Exactly, you know, and like some people don't want to live in society, and like, or they don't want to live in what we
perceive
as society,
success.
Or a success and stuff right. like that. It felt real. Like I couldn't tell who was an actor.
Yeah.
And who was just, okay, we'll put a camera in front of you.
Yeah. A lot of these people were just real life nomads. That's like The Rider. She used all non-professional actors on The Rider. This movie should not have been rated R. It was rated R because there's a brief shot of Frances McDormand floating down the river naked, and it's not titillating. It's not sexual at all. It is literally her being free. That's the whole point of the shot. It's her being free. She is free to do what she wants to do. She can be in her natural state in the wild, in nature. It is like, I didn't watch that shot and think, oh my God, yeah. I watched that shot and I was like, I wish I could be as free as that. That to me, that shot sums up the movie of why she also is living how she's living right. because she can be free. Joshua James Richards.
You've made
poetry.
Yeah.
Like visual poetry.
It's
twice in a row.
Right. It's simple and it's subtle. And that's kind of hard to do, especially when you're doing like handheld shit, because sometimes your handheld shit, it just looks like you're trying to like move the camera. But Joshua James Richards, I got nothing to, like, it's a beautiful film. You shot a beautiful.
Yeah, man.
You shot a beautiful movie. It's not flashy, and it feels real, you know, like you made a narrative feel like a documentary. And I guess that's like that's really high praise.
When I saw this movie, I already knew it was going to win Best Picture. I mean, were you surprised that it won Best Picture?
I wasn't surprised. What I would have wanted some other movies, possibly.
Like the only other one I would want to win was Judas.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to come out and say it, man, but like Judas and the Black Messiah, like, I don't know if I'm being biased because, you know, I'm a blurred. I mean, it's in there. But I think that was the most well-rounded overall, just like best picture. You know?
Okay. Well,
and it's topical too.
Yeah.
It was shot beautifully. It was acted beautifully. We're not going to get into this whole entire conversation how you have fucking no lead and two supporting actor.
Oh yeah, because we got into that already.
Yeah, because they fucking dropped the ball on that one. But I mean, I'm not mad that Nomadland won. It was sad, but it was hopeful. You know, I found myself tearing up a little bit.
Okay, so I looked up who shot Eternals because I was like, Chloe. It seems like Chloe would want to work with this guy.
Like same, like, yeah.
Same guy.
Right.
It seems like a Marvel thing because DP is Ben Davis. And if you don't know who Ben Davis is, he's worked on a few Marvel films. He's did Guardians of the Galaxy 1. He did Age of Ultron. He did Doctor Strange and he did Captain Marvel. But he has some other credits to his names. Like he has Layer Cake. He has
what?
He has Stardust. He has Kick-Ass. He has The Debt. He has the Best Exotic Marigold Hotel. He has Seven Psychopaths. He has Wrath of Titans. He has Before I Go to Sleep. He has Three Billboards. Okay. He has Tim Burton's Dumbo. So
he's proven himself to be able to do like art house shooting and also like
Marvel
big budget.
So like, he's like Marvel's go-to DP.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I get it.
Guys, if Chloe Zhao is allowed to do an Eternal sequel, let her stick with Joshua James Richards. Like,
and honestly, I don't know what the story is. Maybe he didn't want to do it.
That's true. Maybe he was like Bradford Young, where he's just like, no, I just want to shoot like
I want to shoot small, intimate movies.
Because the only movie Bradford Young was nominated for, he was for Arrival. That's his biggest movie before Solo.
Right.
So
all right.
Man, Joshua James Richards, you're one I'm going to be looking for. Let's move on to Cherry, shot by Newton Thomas Siegel, directed by the Russo brothers. This was a glorified music video.
All right.
For 2.5 hours.
All right. So we're agreed to disagree on this one. This seems like a movie where the Russo brothers would have made in order to get the Marvel movie. It seems like at first time at bat, you have some money. I'm going to throw everything at you, all like my little inclinations, all of my little flights of fancy, and I'm trying to prove myself to be an art house film. I loved the way this looked.
You see, this seems like something a first time filmmaker would make. This seems like straight out of I got my first opportunity. I don't want to fuck it up.
That's what I'm saying. Like this doesn't seem like
regression on a filmmaker's part.
But I don't know about that. This seems like a movie they may have been wanting to make for a while.
And it does, but like this story's interesting enough. They don't need all this flashy shit in there to make it a 90s music video.
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the flourishes. It was too fucking long.
Yeah, 2.5 hours.
Like you could have cut a half hour
and, like 30 minutes of it is just them shooting up dope, you know what I mean?
Right.
So
right, I get it. You know, like it feels like they were trying to both make Full Metal Jacket and Trainspotting.
Yeah.
It feels like they were trying to do their versions of that, but I love the use of slow-mo. You know, I fucking love the composition, like come on, that 360 shot inside the car where they're having that conversation.
See, I saw that in Waves.
All right.
I don't like Waves either, but like Waves, he overused that 360 shot. Like almost every shot in that movie had a 360 shot. I fucking hate Waves.
Right. Oh, all right.
Cherry's better than Waves.
Okay, so here's the thing. They did weird shit throughout the movie, but they only did it once. The only consistent visual flourish throughout this would be the slow motion.
Yeah, I'm not a fan, man. I'm not a fan of the. Newton Thomas Siegel is another one who has credits to his name. Like,
right, he's been in the game for a while.
Yeah,
man. It felt like a younger dude shot this. Like, at least this feels like this was the Russos. Like we wanted to do this since like the early 2000s and the 90s before we got on the scene.
Newton Thomas Siegel, what has he shot? Because I know I've seen his name before in movies I liked where I was just like, you've done some work, man.
I'm pulling up.
You've done some, and some great work too. Not just good, but great work.
Out of all of the films, I think this is the most towards my sensibilities. I'm not going to say it's the most beautiful of them, even though to me it is, but I think it's beautiful because it's in line with my sensibilities. Mm. You know, I like that music video look. But look, the dude shot Drive.
Yeah, see?
Like Three Kings. Yo, yeah, fucking Three Kings. See? I still fucking fuck with them.
See?
Usual Suspects.
Yeah.
X-Men Apocalypse.
Well, didn't he do X2? X2 is a beautiful looking movie.
We'll agree to disagree.
All right.
We'll get into.
Well, that's a whole thing that we can't get into. That's all said and done with.
Yo, guess what he did?
What?
Blank Man.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh shit. I gotta rewatch that now.
Yo.
Yeah, man. Like,
so he's done some shit, and yeah, it shows, but it feels like a younger man's movie.
Well, yeah. I'm gonna give him a clap for Drive, because Drive, all around Drive, that, like,
yeah, I'll
give, that's know, the last movie Nicholas Winding Refn did that was good.
Did you see his Amazon show?
No, I didn't.
It's good. It's good. But like, you have to realize that it's his, like, that's his style, man. It's fucking slow. It's a slow burn with characters that are very boring that do interesting things.
I like Pusher. I like the entire Pusher trilogy, and I like Drive, and I like Bronson. Bronson's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, I even like Only God Forgives. And the Neon Demon was just weird enough. You don't have to love something to like it. You're like, you don't have to like to appreciate that it's, you know, technically it should be considered a.
Yeah. Well, I will say that they both are great looking films. But right. Like,
look, they're boring films. He makes boring, like deliberately boring films
that are nonsensical.
Yeah.
Because Neon Demon's fucking nonsense.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't understand it, but it looked cool, and the acting was on point for the acting style. You know, it's that whole entire hollow human being.
Sure, thing. Sure.
But anyway, I really dug Cherry.
You know what, man? I hope Tom Holland gets more dramatic roles. Like, homie, that's how homie started off. I hope homie gets back. Yeah,
I can't wait to see his Oscar-nominated film. Like, he's got one in him.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
like he's got an Oscar, like he's got a best actor in him, because even in that piece of shit The Devil All the Time, that Netflix show.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, he was the best part of that.
I want to know how that dude got that stacked cast, because I saw what other movies he did, and I was like, he got the Netflix money and the cast for that?
Well, I mean, what is Netflix money? I would tell you one thing about Cherry. Cherry looked expensive as shit.
Well, and that wasn't.
No?
No.
How much did that make that for?
Cherry is $40
million. $40 million is a decent budget, especially for a studio that's just kind of like coming on the scene. Because, I mean, most Netflix movies don't cost $40 million.
You know what, man? This is going back. Like, good on, I'll say this, good on the Russos, because they know how to take money and use it wisely. This is why I'm going back to Spiral, because Spiral cost $20 million. The first Conjuring cost $20 million. Which one looks more expensive?
I mean, Spiral. I mean, like, I think Spiral looks more expensive.
Really? I think the Conjuring looks more expensive.
Well, I mean, you couldn't really tell what was going on in fucking Spiral, so you might be right.
You know, Spiral, man, I don't know how, it has that dated new metal early 2000s look, $20 million, and it looks like it was shot for $2 million. Like, where the fuck does the money go for these Saw movies? Because these Saw movies all have a budget of $20 million, and they all look like they cost two.
Yeah, I mean, it's not in the gore effects. You can't really even fucking see what's going on, because it's all shot dark. It's all,
yeah.
It's either really shot dark, or you got this contrasty lighting going on. Jordan Oram, he's done a Drake music video.
Yeah, there you go.
The Cinema of Sleep. He's a music video dude.
See?
Yeah.
That explains so much.
Yeah.
So much. Because you know what, man? These Saw movies all remind me of Nine Inch Nails videos if they tried to look edgy. Yes. At least Trent has a vision, and those videos are works of art.
I think they look like Nine Inch Nails videos done for cover bands. So if you're a Nine Inch Nails cover band,
yeah,
you shoot your music video like a Saw movie.
But yeah, shout out to Newton Thomas Siegel. He makes the neon pop. Like, I hate to keep going back to Drive, but Drive's such a well shot movie.
Yeah, I mean, like, there we go. But we go back to the collaboration between the director and the DP.
Yeah.
Because say what you will, there are flourishes in Cherry that you can tell are Russo brothers. You can tell, like, the use of text, the use of overhead, even the lens flares. It seems like stuff we've seen in all of their, at least their Marvel stuff. Because, I mean, they only came on the scene doing
Arrested Development.
Right, but they came from TV.
Yeah.
Which I want to know how that happened. I want to know how they went from, like, Arrested Development and Community to, like, getting the Marvel movies. I want to know what those pictures are like.
They were friends with Steven Soderbergh. And Soderbergh was like, hey, you should like these guys. They're big Captain America fans. They know everything about the character.
Right.
And Soderbergh handed Feige the paintball episodes of Community.
Yeah, those paintball episodes still stand.
Yeah, they're fucking epics. Like you said, most of these are collaborations between the director and the DP.
Right.
So, and despite what I feel about Cherry, I could say I feel like the weakest collaboration here is definitely Trial of the Chicago 7, because it's just, it feels like that has no vision. Just no vision whatsoever.
Right. I mean, and like I said, I'm not talking shit on the actual DP. I'm just saying that
it lacks vision on the director's part.
Right.
Going back to Deakins, the God DP, that's why one day when he was exclusively with the Coen brothers, and that's all he was doing for a while, that's why the Coens would have him storyboard every shot in the movie. Like, they would storyboard every frame of that movie. And that's why when people are like, why are their movies so, like, great and hypnotic? Storyboarded literally every shot.
Right. It's a communication between the DP and the director.
Yeah, man.
I can't get over Cherry. Like, the use of light, man, like when he's in the bank and the lights come down low and shit like that, and he's having the conversation with the camera. I really dug that shit, man. Like, it felt theatrical.
I'm not gonna knock you for saying that. It didn't work for me, man.
It's fine. I mean, but I think, yeah, it's the most deliberately shot. I will say that. Besides Mank, it is the most deliberately shot.
Yeah. And Mank, it works because that's what they were going for.
Right.
And they're emulating Citizen Kane. Right. So let's get into the final one. News of the World by Darius Wolski.
This was directed by Paul Greengrass, which I didn't even realize when I was, you know, before I started watching it.
Well, I did, because, you know, I saw this back during awards season. I liked this. This felt like an old school Western. It looked like an old school Western.
But it still had a little bit of the Greengrass handheld look, which you don't really see in Westerns.
But it wasn't overt or Captain Phillips.
Or Captain Phillips.
Captain Phillips has that hard rack zoom, zoom in where he says, look at me, and the camera just zooms in real quick, and he says, look at me, and he zooms in again.
But I mean, it wouldn't work for that, because like,
it's like trying to be a Western of yesteryear.
Right, right. And but like the handheld works for this. Beautiful vistas. I mean, nothing.
Yeah.
You know, like,
I kind of wish I saw it in a theater, honestly. When we got to the sandstorm part, I was like, shit, man, I wish we could have saw this in a theater.
Yo, this dude shot Crimson Tide.
Yeah, see, I knew that name looked familiar.
Yo.
He's another one that probably has joints under his name.
He's doing House of Gucci.
Oh, so Darius, if you're listening to this, come on, talk about the movie. Either with Ridley Scott or even without Ridley, we'd love to have you on.
Alien Covenant.
Like, oh, so the, you've the worked.
Martian. Like, he's.
Oh, you've done
so
joints.
So he's Ridley's dude.
Oh, so did he do The Last Duel?
Yep, Kapu? The Last Duel.
Okay, so this is an open invitation to both Ridley Scott and Darius Wolski. We'd love to have you on.
Yo, he did Dark City.
Yeah, see?
All right, so this guy's got some bangers.
Yeah, yo, listen, there's stuff in this movie that's just gorgeous. Like, when they go to the town and it's basically Florida?
Yeah.
where they're like, you got to read this fake news. You can't read that real shit. We don't want that here. That's outlawed. I was like, oh, so we're in Florida now.
Yeah, no, it's a beautiful film, but I expected nothing less from Greengrass.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, like, man.
It's just, and it's subtle.
Yeah.
There's something about not being overt about the shit.
Yeah. And that's the only time it becomes a full-on Western where you see Tom Hanks. You're like, oh, you still got it, where he's taking him out.
Right, he's slanging.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
He's got to do.
But other than that, like, for the most part, the movie just has that old school feel good sensibility of just, you know, a man trying to bring joy from
trying to do the good thing.
Yeah, man. So this is one where, again, collaboration between the director and the DP worked in its favor. This is this is like a John Ford Searchers type shit, man. Not on that level, but you get what I'm trying to say, the feel of it.
It's another subtle, slow movie.
Right. But not slow in the boring sense.
Right. Just, no. But I hate
it's deliberately paced.
Right. I hate how, like, slow has this bad connotation to it.
Right.
I guess I should say deliberate.
It's the movies that we don't get anymore.
Thoughtful.
Yeah.
There we go. That's the word. Thoughtful.
Seeing this, it reminds me of if this is what Scorsese is going to try and achieve on his Western, because he's even said, he's like, I'm trying to make Westerns like they don't make them anymore. I want to make the last great Western with what he's shooting right now. Uh-huh. Killers of the Flower Moon. My man's is, but yeah, that's Martin Scorsese's Western. For you guys who don't know, it's called Killers of the Flower Moon. He's shooting right now. It'll be both in theaters and on Apple Plus. Back to news of the world.
News of the world. I got nothing like really to say. Like, I respect all of these filmmakers.
Yeah, so do I.
You know, like,
they've all made stuff that I enjoyed, whether they've written it or directed it.
Right.
Right, there's two films here that maybe aren't in my wheelhouse and I don't like.
Right, I mean shout out to all the DPs.
Yeah.
You know, like, you're working, you're doing it, like, you're getting nominated.
And you guys like, have, like,
you've got some clout and credit.
You guys got some heavy hitters. Like, each one of you has heavy hitters now under
your belt.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, like so.
There's nothing I can do or say that will take that away from you.
Right.
You guys, like,
you're fucking doing it, yeah. You know?
Joshua James Richards, if you're listening to this, I'll work with you because you know what I mean. You got it. I can only imagine how difficult that shoot for Nomadland is, because you know most of that was just on the fly at the time.
I wonder what in this article that we have here, do we have what they shot these on?
Let's see. Let me take a look. I don't know if it does, but no, it just says what their credits and what schools they graduated from.
Because I'd like to know what a lot of these movies were shot.
Specifically, Nomadland, which,
yeah,
just because I can't imagine. To me, when I watch Nomadland, that looks like a movie that would make me miserable the whole time. Like, I know that. I don't have that on me. You know what I mean? I don't.
Yeah, but there was extreme weather. Like,
you know, yeah,
like
I don't cold, have that in me.
Yeah, I tried shooting the cold once. It wasn't for me.
Listen. I'm like the Coens. Like, I want everything storyboarded out. I have a specific vision. This is what I want for you to do for me. But no, man, it doesn't have what they shot on. Shout out to Newton Thomas Siegel. He did Confessions of a Dangerous Mind. That is a crazy ass movie. And he shot The Five Bloods.
All right, so that's another one. How Delroy Lindau wasn't nominated?
Yeah, that movie wasn't nominated in general.
Yo, Delroy should have won all the fucking awards for that performance.
Well,
and the movie was fucking shot beautifully.
Well, going back to Trial of the Chicago 7, everybody was fantastic in that. I don't know why Sasha was singled out as being like best supporting actor when like that whole cast was like,
right. It's hard to be a piece of shit when you have Sorkin's words coming out of your mouth.
Yeah.
You know?
But that also proves back to why people get so enamored by comedy actors doing drama. Like, I always tell people,
it's the same.
The comedic actors make the best dramatic actors.
It's a razor thin margin between comedy and drama.
Yeah.
It really is.
It's the same thing with real life. Comedy and drama goes hand in hand. There's some shit that's funny, that's dramatic, man, just because life is absurd,
right,
in general.
Right. So, like, yeah, I don't know why. Like, I mean, good for him. You know, for doing, you know, for getting the clout that he is, but it's not a stretch.
Yeah, man. Like, if anybody should have been nominated in that movie, it should have been Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Like, to me, he's the one. Mean,
yeah.
But, you know.
Yeah. But, like go back to, you know, like, comedians doing drama. Look at fucking, what's his face? Fucking Punch Drunk Love.
Oh, Adam Sandler.
Adam Sandler.
Jamie Foxx. There was one more I had in my mind, I forgot. But yeah, man, Jamie Foxx, he was in Collateral, man.
Yo, I was watching Collateral the other day, man.
Like, he was nominated twice that year. Best Actor, which he won for Ray, and then right. He was nominated for Best Supporting for Collateral.
Like, I don't know why people don't talk more about Collateral, and I especially don't know why they don't put it up there with Michael Mann's Best Heat.
Well, I don't Michael Mann, nobody does noir like Michael Mann, because everybody acknowledges that Heat's a noir because it follows the noir archetypes. But right. We got to start acknowledging that Collateral is also a noir.
Right. And like I said, I clown Tom Cruise to like the infinite
we degree. Both do we both but, do
but he is a fucking yeah. star and he is killed it.
And this is what I mean by I wish Tom Cruise would go back to acting. Like, sir, you have done the finest acting I've ever seen in some movies, like Risky Business. Come right. on, you're in a Kubrick's last movie,
right? You're a movie star, but like you're that rare movie star who is actually a really great actor.
You're turning it in a crazy performance as an unhinged psycho in Collateral. Like, you see the humanity peak out every once in a while.
That scene where he's talking about jazz in the club and shit like that.
That movie is fantastic.
I forgot Jada Pinkett. I forgot she could act.
Yeah, man. Collateral is one of the most slept on movies, man.
Right. And it was shot all on mini DV too. Cause like
not all of it.
Most of it was like, shot on mini DV.
Some of the stuff at the beginning was on film, but the rest of it was on, like, it was this new Phantom Viper digital camera that they used at the end.
I thought it was mini DV,
No. Like, it's because that's when digital first, like, these digital cameras, when they first came out, that's the what, because they hadn't refined it to what it is today. I mean,
you can tell because of the grain.
Yeah, man. Like, and the way people move and the motion blur, it was ugly, but that's because it was new technology at the time. They don't even make those cameras anymore, the Phantom Viper cameras.
Anyway, thank you for indulging us. Thank you for allowing us to talk shit on you and to also give you all sorts of praise.
Yeah.
You know, like, you're living the dream. Keep making movies, you know, guys. I mean, it's your job.
So. I'm going to say this. I may not, like, to the work you guys did on maybe two of these movies, but everybody here has work that they have done that I am a fan of.
Right, you respect the work, you just don't maybe not respect the project.
Yeah.
That's good enough, and that's, you know, that's the plight of the artist.
We're the film blurred. I'm Brandon Nord, and I'm the motherfucking protagonist.
I'm the protagonist.
I'm Jeff Stewart, a.k.a. He Who Remains.
Don't come at us. It's just fucking movies.
You've been listening to the Film Blurs Podcast.
Man, I just love what you guys do, man.
I never miss an episode. It's the best. It's my favorite podcast.
Follow Jeff on IG on MindfireXL and Brandon on Twitter at BJNTweets.